There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome back to Hour 2 of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. So, Tim.
Yeah.
All the stuff that we've been learning about, I mean, it was definitely an interesting interview with Jeff, talking about where ITC started and how it's progressed. What are your takes? I mean, do you think that there is machinery that can be built that if there is spirit activity out there could actually, within the next 5 to 10 years, that we'll actually be able to real-time hear and carry on conversations with these spirits? I mean, we hear about SpiritCom, but we don't know anybody that's actually used it, except for people that are dead now, right?
Yeah.
And we, you know, Mark Macy gets phone calls from the dead, which all sound like the same foreign voice to me. And again, not putting Mark down, but you heard his presentation, am I right? Most of it sounds like that staccato, very German voice speaking to Mark from wherever he is calling from, right? And we have these kind of different talks that are coming through, but, you know, there's nothing that people can just say, okay, we plug it in and, hi, this is Dave. Hello, Dave. Right? And you've got the voice coming back to you from the other side.
Right.
Do you think that if this is a reality that we can bleed through these veils of time or history or whatever we're doing here, do you think that we could actually find equipment sensitive enough, knowing what you know about engineering and knowing what you know about the recording industry? I mean, is this something that you think could happen, or are you jury's still out for you?
I don't know about the next 5 to 10 years, but maybe a little bit later than that. Just because that, for lack of a better term, technology advances as needs advance, and I don't know that this is necessarily a need. I don't know that there's anybody who's. There are a few people out there, like our next guest, who are actually taking different ideas and actually a very compelling idea of how to get spirit voices or spirit activity. Or interact with spirits, and it's not using any conventional radio equipment, RF equipment, to do it. I mean, it's using a completely different system, which is intriguing to me because it makes more sense. In fact, our next guest, I think, has a more common sense approach to how you would generate stuff like that. Because if you're energy and you're not necessarily RF energy, how are you going to communicate with a device that picks up RF activity?
Okay, well, we've alluded to it. Let's get into our second guest. And now we have the correct pronunciation, right? So we've called him every name we could in the first hour. Yeah. And now we actually have on the line with us this evening. Thank you very much for joining us here in the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'd like to welcome Mr. Bill Chappell. Good evening, sir.
Well, good evening, Dave. Good evening, Tim.
Thank you very much for spending some time with us tonight. It's an honor. I mean, we had a great time getting a chance to meet you out at the Stanley Hotel and talking to you there, seeing some of the equipment that you're working on. And, you know, it was impressive because, like Tim said, you're kind of thinking outside the box, if you will, and trying to figure out these other forms. Now, could you give me an idea? What started you, Bill, into the idea of trying to do spirit communication?
Well, the whole thing started, I retired in 2001, and I was interested watching some of the different shows that are on in the Ghost Hunters, and I attended a paranormal conference, and it really started watching people do two things, talking about collecting conventional EVP and working with dowsing rods, and I kind of took exception to what people were telling me as far as how these things were occurring. Not that the event itself was occurring, but probably the method. In other words, how the spirit or whatever this is imprinting their voice or using these devices. So it got me thinking about it, and I started actually spending some time really developing what I called a digital dowsing rod, an electronic replication of just conventional dowsing rods themselves.
Now, how do you do that? Now, to me, that's interesting. I mean, dowsing rods, as we know it, there's like the divining rod, the old stick that, you know, Y stick that points down. The divining rods are now like brass or metal rods that you hold in your hands loosely, and they supposedly will swing back and forth or cross when you're coming closer to a spirit or an entity. Is that what you were thinking of when you created your digital dowsing rods?
That was the premise when I first started, and in fact, even in the current project that's getting ready to release next week, they still actually have a set of copper antennas. There's a right and a left. But basically what we did is we took a very simple principle. We said, okay, I've got right hand, left hand, right antenna, left antenna. And then I electronically looked at the differences between those two and correlated them to say, okay, the signal is predominantly from the right side, predominantly from the left side, equal right and left. You know, if you sum them together, they'll cross, that type of thing. So that was the premise I started with, and I actually came up with a little handheld device that you can walk around with, and it mimics a set of dowsing rods. My thought process was I wanted to take some of the I can make the move right and left consciously out of it, and that's where I went with it.
Okay. Now, was there anything that, you know, other than just being a fan of the paranormal shows, did you have a vested interest in trying to figure out a way to communicate? Was there somebody that you were hoping to make communication with on the other side?
I don't know that I say I have a vested interest in communication. I think I've had a fascination with it. I think since a young child, I've always believed there's some type of paranormal connection. I lived in a house growing up that was probably borderline haunted. I mean, you know, over a period of 10 years, I can remember 10 or 12 events that just, you never understood. You could never figure them out. They never made precise, you know, sense. You couldn't label it. You couldn't say it was floor creaking, you know, just weird things. There were parts of this house you'd walk through and you'd just tingle head to toe. And, you know, things like that. You always had the shadows out of the corner of the eye. So I think I've always had a predisposition to it. But as far as the spirit connection to it, I really didn't start into that until about 2006.
Now, what's your background so people know? What is your background in life? I mean, you're an engineer, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm an electrical engineer. I worked most of my life in commercial robotics. I did machine interface, so you know, sensor design, plant floor interface, machine to machine, that type of thing. The last 4 years, I worked for a semiconductor company where we actually did the lithography equipment that makes reticles, handles reticles.
Okay. Now, you're retired from that line of work now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you work with other engineers? I mean, have you talked to other engineers in the field about this type of research, or do engineers in whole kind of poo-poo the idea and ignore it because of, you know, it's just still being kind of an out there field with the paranormal?
Or is there a secret
society of you brainiacs that are still really into this and putting stuff together to try to make these communications?
You know, there are a few other people I know of that are actively working on this right now. Most people won't talk about it.
Right.
I've got a couple good friends of mine that have just come out and told me flat out, you're insane. And why would you, with the background you've got and the things you've done, why would you go here? But it wasn't, it wasn't a financial type thing. It was an interest. And so I do have a few people I converse with time to time. We bounce ideas off of. You know, more or less, it's the current state of it is just trying to get to a point where we can narrow down something. You know,
well,
and
why
I think
wouldn't
that's
as an engineer, knowing how things work, why wouldn't you want to expand the horizons of communication? I mean, that's what I think is funny. You know, some of these people are looking at you as, wow, you're too smart to do this stuff, and isn't that exactly what we need? We don't need Jethro in the shed with a weed whacker and a ham radio trying to figure out how to communicate with the spirits of God, you know? It's somebody that actually has a background in this that's going to break us through to the next communicative level.
Well, I think that I would say yes and no with that. I think sometimes with a certain level of education and background, you get some preconceived notions that'll probably hinder you in some ways. So I may not look at something the way someone else that doesn't have that background would, or I may not try a combination that someone would. So we need everybody. I think it's we need more experimentation on all levels. I think what I'm trying to do currently, and I'll go into it, is I'm trying to take the actual data we can physically gather out of the environment and put that with the ITC portion of this at the same time. And the reason I'm doing that is I'm saying, and people have talked to me quite a bit, I don't care about the message right now. I care about the method. I'm looking for that 1% that I might be able to identify that says, hey, if we look here, and I make my equipment 100 times more sensitive, and I focus it right here, I can key into 1% of what's happening. If we can do that, Dave, then we can actually start breaking this thing down. But if we keep continuing with the shotgun approach where I've got an EVB recording and I've got a photograph, and I have no data putting the two together, not even a timestamp, we don't know what we're doing. I mean, we're just catching things, but we're not really putting the whole picture together.
Right. We're kind of in its infancy state. So you're about correlating so that way we can have when the sounds and the visual and everything comes together. Now, the equipment that you created was amazing to me. Some of it, I mean, it goes as far as recording to getting everything from the barometric pressure to the EMF to the temperature, ambient temperature of the room, everything. So it's influencing and reading all of this all at once. And now is that recording, is it going into a specific software that you've created, or did you just manipulate a different software so that it would work with your equipment?
I actually wrote a software package that works with the equipment, and what it does is it takes all the data and it creates what's called a CSV file, and this is a common file that any spreadsheet program can bring up and look at. The reason I chose that was it's the most common for people, and it's the most familiar for people to go through and be able to do search, sort, and correlate the data. What we do is every row that's in this spreadsheet is a single pass of all the data time-stamped at one time. So you'll have EMF and temperature and voltage data and frequency data. You'll have natural EMF and oscillating EMF field all on the same line. So you can start to look at things like saying, okay, I see a magnetic at the homily, I see a voltage shift, I see a frequency shift, and I got this at the same time. And that's, we've actually gone on now and slaved in capture with the video portion of the PC and audio capture so that it's a complete line by line. You can see everything as it happened. And what I'm hoping for and what we're already starting to see are some trends that are telling us that, you know, there are some precursors to an event, there's the event itself, and there's what happens after the event. And, you know, I'm hoping a year, 2 years from now, I can look at a couple million of these events, and then we can say, okay, the next generation of this equipment has to be focused in this range. And that may not be the correct range to go to, but what we have to do is we have to pick a criteria and narrow it down and go there. But, you know, until we do this type of research, we can't make that next step.
What are you finding right now with the phenomena that you're able to get when you've gotten some voices that have come over your equipment and you've gotten this? Have you noticed notable shifts in the electromagnetic fields, barometric pressure, temperature dropping? Have you begun to notice those things already?
We do a little bit now. Barometric pressure, I don't do on the unit that's out commercially right now. We have it on our research units. You know, I'm hesitant to say that I have but we do see the phenomenon most commonly associated. Momentarily, we'll see a small shift in the natural magnetic field, in other words, a variance north to south, east to west, followed by a drop in the ambient voltage and frequency. And, you know, that's just only correlated over a few hundred samples.
As an engineer, what would you say? Why would there be a drop in that? Wouldn't it seem to almost beg that it would amp up as the communication was being made? Or are they drawing from ambient energy source in order to make themselves known or seen or heard?
Well, you know, I wish I could answer that directly. The best analogy I can make to it is if I had a fan running and you're standing in front of the fan. And then as the event, I step in front of the fan, and what you feel all of a sudden is calm, and then I step away, and then you feel a rush of air. So the event itself was me stepping through the fan, and that's where everything dipped down. So I think what I'm seeing is actually an attenuation. Now, whether they're actually charging or grabbing energy or just the event itself is attenuating the ambient energy to some level or grounding it in some fashion, I'm not 100% sure yet. There's just not enough data to make that assumption. But like I say, right now, it appears what we see really more realistically is a drop. And then you see that drop, and then you see the resurgence. And I think that I was talking to a few people about this at Stanley. We had an event like that happen. And I was asked the same question, you know, shouldn't the EMF spike? And I said, well, I'm not sure that you're actually perceiving a spike, because most of your EMF meters are reading a baseline, you know, and then they need it to go above that. So you don't really see it sag below a certain point, especially on most of the meters, you know, unless it's below, you know, above 1 milligauss, you don't really see a change. So I think you see the sensation or substation of the event, and then the EMF reoccurs, and you get this momentary spike. That's my assumption right now, and I'm just basing that on some very limited data.
All right. Now, with the equipment that you started, what led you to, and we're going to play some in a little bit after the first commercial break, we'll probably come back and do a little bit of some of the audio that you've supplied to us as well. But when did you start to put a voice to the software to try to get, you know, anomalous speaking?
That actually occurred late 2006, early 2007. I was approached about ITC communications. I'd heard some of the clips that Frank Sumption had done and looked at some of the other work with SpiritCom. And it was the first time I actually put the realization that I could take the information I was getting and then actually produce speech. And I'll talk about that after the break, but we did it a couple different ways. We first did it completely phonetically paced, and then for some reasons I'll get into, we actually switched to a text dictionary and started going down that route.
Now, with a text dictionary, what exactly does that mean? You're entering in a random set of 1,000 words, and it kind of pulls from there?
Yeah, this dictionary we use is 2,000 of the most common words in the English language. It was set up alphabetically, and then we sorted it or scrambled it basically like 7 different times and then hard-coded it into the software. You know, it gives us a predictable subset to work from, and that's one of the things you have to start looking at when you're doing analysis of data is, you know, what are the possibilities? And you have to have a controlled set to work with. If they're infinite, you really don't have anything to work with.
All right, very good. Well, I'm curious, too, now, with the process that you use, when you saw Frank Sumption's work with the Franks box, as an engineer, do you see ways to tweak it yourself that you think would make it a more viable product or make it work a little bit more clearly than the random or linear sweeps that they're currently doing?
Well,
is there anything you'd like to see him try adding or subtracting from a Frank Specs, or have you worked with a Frank? Now, I know we'll get into, you know, Shack Hacks and all the other versions of the Frank Specs that are out there, but is there anything that you, as an engineer, would like to see connected with a Frank Specs or tooled with to get a different effect?
Well, I think the biggest thing, personally, the way I look at it, would be to do one that has multiple receivers. And the reason I say that is because I'm really about data. What I would like to see is a receiver for each channel simultaneously, and then the swept receiver. And the reason I'm saying that, and then you need time sync so that when an anomalous speech pattern comes across, we can go back and we can say, okay, I have all of the actual speech information that made this, and then we can reassemble it or we can't. And I think in the case of this type of communication, what you're looking for is the ability not to be able to assemble that. In other words, if I can't find those fragments on those stations that made the words, then you really have an event that's taken place because something has been altered. If we don't have that, well, then we really have to look at it and say, is it coincidental? Does it match? You know, is it contextually correct? So I think if anything I would do, I'd probably add more to the receiver portion of it just to try and be able to do more authentication.
But that seems like it would be even harder to do, to be able to, because are you referring to, in a way, recording every station so that as the timestamp hits, you could go back to that general recording from the stations that it was scanning to see if you pick up those that context or that subtext that's going on?
That's correct.
Wow. Now that seems like a bigger undertaking than communicating with the spirit world, Bill.
Yes, it is. So, you know, I kind of shied away from it. But you're asking as an engineer, you know, right. if I had my druthers about how we're going to try and prove these things, you know, right. that's what it gets down to. And I think it's not only proof, it gets to where I'm going, Dave, is it would start giving us a glimpse. In other words, when does this occur? Is it station between station to station? Is it within this certain tonality? Is there something about the frequency it's hitting? You know, those are the type of questions I look at. So, like I say, I keep saying it's not the message, it's the method.
Understandable. Well, we're going to take our first break here of the second hour. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest, Bill Chappell, or Chappell, I'm sorry. Names are going to be horrible tonight, Tim. Communication with spirit world, not a problem. Saying my guests' names properly, big issue. We'll be back with more right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Mi amo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. Do you hear loud moans and banging on your walls? Next time, pay for the better hotel room.
Oh, no more Yankee, my winky. The donga needs food.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'd like to direct your attention to a sponsor of ours. Dean Haglund has created a brand new invention. It's awesome. It's called the Chill Pack. It's made for your laptop, where you can actually make your laptop a laptop again. You know how hot they get, the bottom of your laptop. The Chill Pack is like a large ice pack, if you will. You throw it in the freezer. It's got special layers to keep the condensation from getting to the computer, but it actually helps to cool down your CPU. It'll speed up your computer. It's a great item, and you can put your laptop back on your lap where it belongs again and not have to worry about scalding yourself or burning the goodie bag, right, Tim? That's what we seem to have to deal with.
I kind of enjoy burning the goodie bag, but that's just
would.
Me.
We've got this. I've tried it out. I've loved it. I've actually bought one for me and bought one for my mom to try. She loves it. It's a great item. You can check it out at going to deanhaglund.com. That's DEANHAGLUND.com. It's very inexpensive. You will love it once you get it home. It gives you the freedom to start working again and not sit there and burn the hell out of your flesh and body with your laptops. So pick one up. Very affordable. And also while you're there, you can check out Dean's got a great DVD from the comedy improv show we did at the February Queen Mary event, right? Where it was Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters and Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence all joined him on stage, and they did a comedy improv show together. It was hilarious. He's got the DVD available on his website. You can also pick that up by going to deanhaglund.com. We're going to get back into tonight's show. Our guest is Bill Chappell, and we're talking to him about some of the newer ITC-style equipment that he's putting together. And we're going to listen here in a few minutes, talk a little bit about some of the actual evidence he's been able to collect so far. So, Bill, why don't you take us up to date? What was the stuff that you started to work on when, you know, getting into the voice version of this and you know, making the next leaps, of course?
Okay. Well, I need to state a couple things. At this point in time, when I went to, was introduced to the idea, I didn't have a firm belief. Now, I didn't have a firm disbelief, but the voice thing I wasn't sure of. So I kind of treated it like a joke at first.
Okay.
And I'm real upfront about that. I mean, I just got to be the way I am. And so it was kind of fun, and I agreed to meet a couple people out in Waverly, and I would try and produce this type of device, and we would see what the results were. And so that's the way I got into it, and that's the way I approached it. And it was probably that first or the second night in Waverly when I actually tried to test the device that really started tipping things for me, because, you know, I was going along and going, okay, I'm working odds out in my head and say, well, this thing, well, every once in a while it's going to say something that makes sense, and that's going to be real fun. But you know, I'm sitting there in this event, and I'm sitting in the back of the room because I'm still not finished with the software, and I'm typing and typing and typing and typing, and I'm realizing that I've got a problem where the device keeps saying the same word over and over. Now, I've got a filter in there and a buffer designed to stop that in the software, but it was still happening. So I kept getting the word water, and it must have repeated, I've got headphones on and I'm listening to this, a couple thousand times while I'm trying to edit this code. And that's the first clip I've got to play, just so people have an idea what I was listening to as I was trying to finish up this software.
Okay, good. You've got that. Tim, you've got that queued up? Okay.
Water, 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 water.
So that's just hammering away at your eardrums while you're sitting there trying to finish this.
Okay. And you understand, as I've written the hard, I mean, I've created the hardware, I've written firmware, I'm writing the software as I'm doing this. I've got a filter that goes in and says, okay, if this word comes in for the next 100 words, do not repeat this word. But yet I'm still getting this. So I'm thinking, well, I've got a piece of latent code. So I wipe everything out, and it's like 15 minutes before we're going to go actually into Waverly. We're still down the staging area. I wipe everything out in the one section, and I retype it back in, and I shut my machine down. I do a cold boot, bring it back up, and I run the software for the very first time in the running form, and the next wave, the Friday night, is the wave I get the very first time.
Blake, water Friday night, you die.
Wow.
Play that again. So
let me get that again real quick. Hold on one second. Let's play that one more time. Go ahead, Tim.
Blake, water Friday night, you die.
Yeah, now see right there, that would have been enough for me, Bill, to just close my computer and say, yeah, I don't think I want to do this anymore. No, it just said, water Friday night, you die.
Lake water Friday night.
Oh, lake water Friday night.
Yeah, that's pretty
well. Well, that softens it. Then I continued.
Well, it shot my computer is exactly what it did. I kind of snapped the laptop closed and sat there for a second. And, you know, I've got an auditory kind of memory, and I can play those things back. And, you know, even right now, a year and a half later, I can still hear exactly the way that came through. And I thought about it for a few seconds, and I walked over where a very good friend of mine was, and they were looking at me, and he says, well, did you get it running? I'm like, I'm just kind of sitting there, and he says, oh, it's not working. I said, no, it is. He says, is there a problem? Yeah, I think so. You got it working? You didn't get it working. No, I got it working. So what's the problem? Well, it's working, you know. And from that night, probably was the most wild set of events I've ever had with this thing. Every time I would get within a foot of the device, it would say the word water. Now, about 3 o'clock in the morning, that started to change, and it would give me the word water and homicide. Now, anybody else would come up to it, like a very good friend of mine that was there, it'd give him, he's a computer programmer, it'd say digital, friend, computer, things like that. Other people would
So it was like recognizing him. It was almost like it was understanding or realizing who was in its presence.
Very much so. And in fact, to go down that line, I really talk about this, and I talk about it as environmental communication rather than strictly as ITC, because I haven't defined a definition of exactly what we're communicating with or touching with here. But that's what really keyed me into it, and that by the end of that night, I was pretty visibly upset by the people that knew me, because it did too many things. There were just too many times. We had a lady that was speaking Spanish that walked up to it, and it would only answer with sí and no. Now, those words weren't in the dictionary. I mean, the word no is in there, but the word sí, as in Spanish, sí is not there. But it would answer with the word sí, like as in sí and vision. And a couple other things were just so strange that night that it just really tipped the scales for me. And then I kind of, as an engineer, I sat down and it shocked me, and I thought about it for a long time, and I really wrestled with it. At that point, I wrestled with, am I even going to go forward with doing this? Because I was just very concerned, not so much for myself, but if I was to put this out there and let other people use it, what the exposure would be like. And I really had a difficult time wrestling with that at first.
All right, let me hear that one more time, Tim. Do we still have that queued up?
Blake, water Friday night, you die.
Yeah, Bill, that's just creepy. So it's recognizing and saying things. And so now, are you sitting there sweating, holy crap, I'm going to stay away from the lake on Friday night? Or, because automatically you're thinking, wait, okay, so it knows he's a computer techie. He knows she's speaking Spanish. And every time I come by it, it's telling me water, homicide, die Friday night. That, you know, that would pretty much, I would never leave my home again on a Friday night, and certainly would be nowhere near a body of water, that's for damn sure.
Well, I didn't fly back till Monday, so, you know, that was the first thing. but, you know, I think that the thing was, I have a morbid fear of drowning, and that happened from an accident down in Mexico, you know, when I was snorkeling, and then my wife and I were on vacation in Hawaii, and I got dumped out of a sea kayak 7 times. So, you know, I have this kind of morbid fear about that whole thing, so I don't know. I mean, I really don't know how
it
came about.
Well, now, did you do some, have you gone back? Was it a Friday that you were in the kayak and that was happening to you?
You know, I've never gone back to look at those things.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what it was, because if it's something that made an impression on your life and it's part of you, I wonder if it's, you know, it was just repeating to, you know, give you clarification, since it knew things about other people there. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be interesting if it turns out that was a Friday night that you were going underwater and, you know, felt like you were going to die. That might have been what it was picking up on. I'm just curious if you ever get a chance to review that and then get back to us on the show. I'd love to know that.
I sure will.
Okay.
You know, that would be a fun thing to look at. I had a few people ask me about what I think it means. And, you know, here's the thing. I think had I not got such a dramatic response, something that was just so slapped me in the face, I don't know that I would have continued. I probably would have finished the night out, laughed it off, and went on to do something different.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not sure. Like I say, and I tell people very bluntly, I don't know what we're dealing with here. They ask me what I think it is. I think it's quite a few things. Is it spirit communications? Quite possibly. Is it a PK type event from human? Quite possibly. Is it dimensional? I don't know. I think the thing is I think we're looking at more than one event simultaneously. And, you know, I'm just trying to go down one set of parameters and see if we can figure out one part.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you said that you had a specific dictionary, and then you scrambled the words. Now, would the computer have certain recognition? I know we just had Jeff Belanger with us in the first hour, and he was talking about the fact that out at Tombstone they used a version of your digital dowser, and he said what was interesting is they said, you know, they were out there and they're like, wow, look at all those stars, beam me up, Scotty, and it started saying stars, you know, war, battle, or, you know, I mean, it started like doing all these things. And then they were talking about the cars on the road, and they're like, wow, it's crazy how there's, you know, absolutely no traffic, highway, road, crash, you know, and it started saying things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that the software might be looking for words that are related? Almost, we were joking about it in the first hour, like the $10,000 pyramid. You say words around the word that you're trying to, you know, communicate. Could there be a chance that the software is just doing a word recognition and it's piecing other words together with it that would make sense with that word?
No. Let me explain how the whole system works.
Please.
First of all, the software doesn't make any manipulation in the dictionary in any way, shape, or form. The device that powers it, we actually call a puck. And what it does is it has 8 different sensors inside there that give it environmental data. Okay, that's how we get the voltage and the frequency, antenna A and B, EMF and natural EMF. That's where all the data is driven from. There are no random events. There are no timed events. Everything's driven directly out of the environment. Those values are brought into the computer, and it's literally at that point we do what's called an A to D conversion, analog to digital. We take the values in. We create a value. In other words, let's say that the scale is 0 to 2048, okay? So whatever that potential is, whether we're using frequency or voltage or a combination, if that's 1, we go to the first word. If it's 500, we go to the 500th word. And it's that direct correlation. The only exception to that is that if we're sitting there and we get what I call an ambient jitter, in other words, we're getting energy levels that are doing nothing. They're peaking and valleying by 1 or 2 counts. It'll filter for that. It works like a squelch on radio. In other words, it says, okay, you've got to get 10 counts above or 10 counts below the nominal average, or we're not going to say anything. That's the only filtering that takes place.
Okay.
So, you know, and what he's saying is exactly what we've been saying, and I've seen it over and over again. It tends to pick up on the environment it's in. I had a situation like this when I had it sitting in my office one day, and I kind of just watch it in the corner of my screen, just jabbering in the background. And I noticed that, you know, the text is, and people need to understand, a lot of what you're going to see on this type of device is gibberish. It's not all boom, boom, boom. It doesn't work that way. I have yet to see it work like that, but you'll get it tracking in. And all of a sudden, I started noticing the comments just seemed to be, like, more and more angry. I started getting more punctuation in the text, and it was like, you know, let's go, hurry now, this kind of thing. And I stepped outside my office, and as far as I could see in both directions, the traffic had backed up, and there was an accident about a block away. Mm. And it was just funny because, you know, I had no inkling that it was even going on. But what he's saying is very similar to what I've seen with the device, and it just seems to key in on the environment itself. Now, we've had some instances that I can't talk about because they're ongoing investigations, and they do involve police investigations that we've played with, and we're starting to see things where we pick up on things in the environment that no one in the immediate environment would have information on. Now, how that occurs, I don't know yet, but we do see those type of things happening.
Well, that's interesting, Bill. You know, there's a, I just was sent a video from one of our listeners just within the last couple of weeks here, and it was actually just before we went to the Stanley. It's equipment that Texas Instruments, along with, I want to say it's like Advantage Technology, had put together for people that suffer from Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And it was a collar that goes around the neck, and there were these little prongs that I guess, you know, would touch at the back of your brainstem on the outside. And if I'm understanding this correctly, the guy made the phone call on his cell phone. He's like, hey, Bill, how are you? And you could see the guy concentrating, but his mouth didn't move, and suddenly this mechanical voice said, like, I am doing well, thank you for asking. And it was like picking up on the neuron from his brain, you know, whatever signal was being passed was what was telling this box how to communicate with the person on the other side, you know, on the other end of the phone, which almost sounds like exactly what you were just experiencing with having it in there and realizing everybody's like, come on, hurry, hurry, we got to go, and looking out and seeing the traffic. So it does almost lend itself to think that there could be a much heavier PK influence on this type of equipment. As a matter of fact, I had talked to Bill Murphy. I said, Bill, we should contact them, see if there's any way to get one of these and use it at a haunted location to see if it could be used. And he said, Dave, wait till you see Bill and you hear what he has to say about his technology. I think you're going to see it's almost exactly to what they're doing. Are you familiar with this new technology that's out there?
A little bit, and I have looked at it. You know, it's a lot more sophisticated. It's a lot more localized. They're doing two things. They are looking for certain brain activity, and they're looking for, you know, patterns of muscle movement that are still available. And they're simulating what the larynx position would be and that type of thing, and approximating a voice. So a lot more sophisticated. I can guarantee you there's not that much thought process in this device. It's just an anomaly we see, you know.
But if it's claiming, their device is claiming to be able to pick up on the electric current from your brain, from the brain stem or so, that's able to communicate with this, couldn't that in effect then almost work like your device, where it's if the force or the spirits or the energy or your PK are you know, able to manipulate that, that could be what's the communicative link?
Yes, it's possible.
Okay. Well, we're going to take our second break here. We'll be right back. We'll wrap up with the last about 12-15 minutes with you, Bill. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, when she moves, she moves.
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. If you bleed from the ears while listening to Leo Sayer records, would it qualify as a paranormal experience? I thought so. Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Ooh, that hurts.
Sing it.
I'm not doing it, man.
Oh, come on.
Talking.
Ah.
Oh, my God. Bill's going to hang up on us if we have this. Leo Sayer. Why do you want to put our guests through this?
Well, maybe Leo Sayer is a form of ITC device. Is that true, Bill?
Definitely.
See?
He must be, because it's high, squelchy, and it hurts my ears, just like every other form of ITC I've ever heard. Bill, we've got some more of the EVPs. I don't know. What do you call them? ITC clips? I don't know.
What's... Well, you know, I don't even call them that at this point. You know, they're just clips. I think the next one, let's play, after I built the first device. Now, we've been through seven generations of it at this
right.
point, and the one I'm getting ready to release is the seventh generation. I built a couple handhelds because I'm like every other investigator out there. I mean, I don't want to sit next to my PC. I like to go walk around and experience things. So I built this little handheld unit, and a lot of people have used it. I've shipped it literally all over the United States. I've got three of them, and I've only got one in my possession currently. So I've had several clips. The one I've got, the handheld wave, that is a couple I know here where I live, and they had an accident in their family where a family member had passed away, and they asked if they could borrow the device. They took it out to where there's a roadside grave marker, and this is the clip that they returned from it.
Whisper approaching experimental unit test version 001. Glass. Highway. Linger. Sad. Sight.
Wow. Do that one more time for me, Tim. Let's hear that again. Do you see this, Timothy?
Goosebumps.
Wow, literally. What little hair I have is standing completely up right now, Bill.
Yeah, I had about the same reaction to it. That device is just, I don't have explanations for it. It works exactly the same way the PC does.
Now, is this handheld device, does it record itself in there and then you download it into your computer later?
The new version that I'm getting ready to put out actually will save a log file, and then you can reproduce the text from the log file the same way it spoke it.
Okay.
This one did not. You had to actually carry a recorder with it.
An audio recorder?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, I've had this device. I was sitting in some people's house. We were doing an investigation in Kentucky, and they were asking me how I got into this and what my background was, and this device was sitting right next to me, turned on, had not said a word for 20 minutes. And they'd ask me, well, you know, what do you get out of it? And I said, well, you know, it's a lot of fun. And the second I said fun, this device turns around and says fun at the same time. And the gentleman that owned the house was sitting right next to me, and he looked at me and he says, don't tell me that, just said that. And I said, well, I don't know what to tell you, you know. And I've had it do that. I you know, we've gone through the points where it'll almost mimic you, and I'll say okay, and it'll say okay. But the device doesn't listen to me in any way, shape, or form. There's no software or any mechanism like that. So, you know, it's been an anomaly for me, like I say, but the whole premise hasn't been so much the message as the method, and it's trying to open it up to see what we should do next.
Now the other side also has a little sense of humor with you, don't they, Bill?
Absolutely. Now, one of the things I started playing with the very first time I did this, the very first device, was completely phonetic. What I like about phonetics is it's very interesting. What I don't like about phonetics is there are 71, 72 phonemes, depending on who you talk to, that make up most all of the English language. So, you know, when you're playing with generating phonemes, it's very simple to get real words. So I'm careful about that. I tell people, you know, 1 in 71, the odds are you're going to recognize something it says. You know, they're not great odds. They're not long shots like the lottery. But I have a little device that we're going to play next, and this is based on a SpeakJet chip. It's a low-end speech chip. It's not what I use in handheld units, but it's a very inexpensive device. And you hook a little processor to it. Basically, I run it exactly the way the other devices work. I take one channel of ambient energy, and I use that to create the serial values to give to the chip to send out phonemes. The first one we're going to play is a Billy Wave. And I was sitting down in my workshop, and this thing is just chattering in the background, and this is what happens.
Can you say my name? No, I don't like to be called Billy. Can you call me Bill? No, Billy.
I like how right after you get done saying, I don't like to be called Billy, it goes, Bill.
E.
So it's just screwing with you. That is hilarious. Play that one more time, Tim. I just love that soundbite when we were playing it out at the Stanley.
Can you say my name? No, I don't like to be called Billy. Can you call me Bill? No, no, Billy.
And again, this can't hear you. The machine is not built with a condenser mic or anything like that that's
no.
picking up the words.
No. No, there's no input to it in that fashion. The next clip is the same device about maybe 15, 20 minutes later, and I'm asking it what its name is.
That's another attempt. Can you tell me your name? I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Can we try again? It's a little hard to understand. Can you say my name?
Billy.
I like to go by Phil, not Billy.
Billy?
No. Phil. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Billy?
Yeah. Phil, please.
That's hilarious. I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Billy. Billy.
Yeah,
Billy. It's like an annoying little kid. No problem, Billy. So were you able to hear? Let's play that one more time, because do you have a transcript? Do you know what it's saying back to you, or is it just too hard to?
You know, it's just phonetic speech, and no, I don't.
Okay. Go ahead, Tim.
That's another attempt. Can you tell me your name? I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Can we try again? It's a little hard to understand. Can you say my name?
Yeah, Billy.
Yeah, Billy? Is that what it said? Yeah, Billy.
Billy.
I like to go by Phil, not Billy.
Billy?
No.
Yeah,
Phil.
Mom.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Billy?
Yeah. Phil.
Yeah.
Now, you know what, Bill? In that clip, you actually hear it try to... It sounds like phonetically it tries to say Billy because it goes B-I-L-I-L-I.
Yeah,
and then it eventually forms the word, like it's learning how to use the device to communicate what it needs. Because when you didn't hear him, it sounded like it said B-I-L-L.
Yeah,
like B-I-L-L-A. Like Bill. Like he was trying to say Bill, and then you said, I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear it. And then he went, Billy, just to kind of, you know.
Piss you off. Yeah. But, you know, I almost thought in the first batch, it sounded, when you asked for its name, I thought it almost sounded like it was trying to say William. If you just want to play that very beginning part again, Tim, listen to that.
That's another attempt. Can you tell me your name?
William. Like it's trying to
sorry,
say, I'm William. William.
Again?
Now, the second attempt, I didn't hear it, but if you listen, try it one more time in the first time, Tim.
That's another attempt. Can you tell me your name?
Again,
I'm
now that
sorry,
could just be brain
that.
Matrixing,
again?
But it...
Yeah.
But to me, it almost sounded like it was trying to say William, almost like it was trying to say Bill. It was like it couldn't get the figuring how to speak off of that voice box yet.
Mm-hmm. But it is phonetic, and you have to be very careful because, you know, I think two phonemes probably form, any two phonemes you can probably form most, like 60% of the English language. So,
right.
You know, it's very, very tricky to play with it, but it's very interesting.
Have you ever gotten laughter or weeping sounds from it?
No, not with this device. You know, it's not as contextual as a Frank's box.
Right, well, that's
you know,
what I thought
there,
it might be strange.
There's a lot of constraint.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of constraint here.
Because you could hear him saying, like, you know, it was obvious it was playing with you with the whole Billy. What was I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Billy. You know, it was mucking with you. But I just didn't know if it was, you know, are we hearing that properly? Or, you know, I mean, because it almost sounded like
right.
It was mocking you. And as you said, it was. Now, a couple times, does it seem to answer before you ask a question? Because I noticed on both of those, as you're asking, like, its name or your name, it already sounds like it's trying to answer you. Have you noticed that it'll start to answer sometimes before you verbalize a question?
We see that all the time. In fact, I was just down on an investigation this weekend, and a friend of mine that's been helping me with this since the inception, we were talking about that quite a bit, because people say, don't you, because we're running the new equipment, and we're just typing in questions, and they're saying, don't you need to speak those? And we're going, well, no, not really, you know. And but we now make it so that you have to enter the question before the response can come through on the new software. The old system, it used to always be running, and you wouldn't even finish the question before you'd start seeing responses.
You know what I'm interested to try, Bill, and if you could show up to the next Stanley event, I'd love to do this and videotape it. Maybe we could put it on YouTube and let people see. What if we did a form of, you remember Johnny Carson's old Karnak bit?
Mm-hmm.
What if Tim and I put into the envelope some random words and brought the words with and just ask the computer, can you tell us what word is on this envelope? And then we'll tear the envelopes and see if it can phonetically, or, you know, if it can announce what the word is, or maybe ask it a question and see if it can answer prior to us tearing open the envelope.
Oh, we could sure give it a try. I could not even venture to guess what the result might be. But, yeah.
I mean, that would be amazing
more than,
to me.
More than willing.
Yeah, because if you think that, it, you know, certainly if it's already got the precognitive device built into it where it seems to already be answering you before you get done, what would keep it from a test like this where we can actually do that? Well, let's talk to Bill Murphy. We'll see if we can do some filming of that and see if maybe we can put it to the test.
Right. We've done a few tests like that in the past. I had one of these set up in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. The gentleman that was running, I told him what time to turn it on. And I had a group here in Colorado that had no idea of the device, no idea of the test. The gentleman that was running the device on the other end had no idea what I was doing. I passed out cards to everyone in the group, and I said, every 15 minutes, I want you to think of the two words that are on this card. And the frequency of the hits on the device on the other end, when we went and compiled the data, were about 7-1 around those time frames on the 15-minute intervals. So, you know, it does seem to have a PK-type event attached to it. But like I say, I keep going back to this over and over again. I keep looking for the method. You know, the messages I'm getting, the things are very interesting, but I'm very, very tentative to label them as evidence, and I'm very tentative to say that's any type of communication. I mean, I believe it all works. I believe Frank's box is real. I believe the mini box is real. I believe the hack box. I think across the board, these things are working. But what I'm looking for is that method. I want to crack it and say, okay, now we can fine-tune this thing. And, you know, so I'm just taking my first best steps.
Okay. Well, listen, why don't we do this? I think we've got two more real quick clips. We only have about a minute left on the show. One more clip, Tim? Okay, go ahead. And what else do we have here now?
Let's play the He's Bill. Now, in this particular clip, the phonetic generator, it's able to pick phonetics, and it's also able to manipulate the speed and the tonality. And this is another clip where it's saying my name again. And this is on an investigation in Denver.
Okay.
He's what? You like talking to a Furby machine?
Overloaded.
Ready? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Bill, how can people find out more information about you and your work that you're doing?
I've got a couple websites. One is chap.com, and that's chapp.com, and the other is digitaldowsing.com. And currently, we've got one product that's on the market that we're selling. If people want to make the little ITC generator that was doing the Billy,
okay.
I have that chip available. It's a 3-pin connection to a speak jet, and they can have that up and running for, you know, $50-$60. They can make one. I've got the Puck device we were talking about that's coming out, and then a handheld version later next month.
Great. Well, Bill, thank you very much for spending your evening with us here. I appreciate your time. Would love to have you back on more and discuss this, and I'd love to do some more testing with you and just keep in contact.
I sure appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And everybody, again, for more information on Bill, you can check out his website at chap.com. That's chapp.com and digitaldowsing.com. Great show tonight, Tim. Interesting guests. Always fun to talk about the different forms of spirit communication. What do you think of the...
I love the stuff Bill's doing.
Yeah.
I really do. It's very intriguing.
Well, Well, we're going to try to do a little bit more research with that and see if we can't get you some more cool information. Stay tuned to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio in the next couple of weeks. Again, tune in next week. We're going to be talking to a couple of mediums that did some work for a brand new book on the deaths of Jim Morrison and Michael Hutchins. We'll be back with more next week. Thank you all for tuning into the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.